Washington, February 28th, the 812th day of the war. Raymond Graham Swing reviews History on the March, a friendly service from your mobile gas dealer at the sign of the Flying Red Horse.
Picture this scene, if you will. It's just after a big tank battle. American troops are hustling to repair damaged vehicles. One of them says, "Man, we're lucky these spare parts came through in good shape. Thought they were goners when our supply barge was sunk." But it's not just luck. Those salvaged parts were in good condition because of a special waterproofing wax developed in our Flying Red Horse laboratories. Cartons of spare parts, when coated with this wax, can remain underwater for days at a time without damage. And this wax is used to protect not only spare parts for tanks and planes, but our soldiers' battle rations, too. Such contributions to our fighting men are made possible by long years of technical leadership and petroleum experience at the sign of the Flying Red Horse. And now, from the nation's capital, Raymond Graham Swing.
Good evening. The first political strike in Allied-occupied Italy is to be called Saturday in Naples. It will last only 10 minutes, and its purpose is to warn and not to injure. It will be a protest strike against the statement by Prime Minister Churchill in his speech last week, which backed up the King and Badoglio for military reasons. The 6 political parties of Italy are organizing the strike and will make it through the trade unions recently authorized in Naples. These unions take the place of the fascist labor organizations, which were disbanded and have been formed with the approval of former Lieutenant Governor Poletti of New York, now Chief Allied Military Government Commissioner for Naples. The AMG is not expected to do anything to interfere with the strikers, who will attempt to prove that they have real power and influence in Naples. To see a military government preparing to keep hands off a strike called in protest against a statement of an allied political leader is, I believe, something new under the sun. But it is both appropriate and gratifying, for the Allied policy of standing behind the King and Badoglio in disregard of the obvious desires of the people in southern Italy is ethically disturbing, and in the opinion of many persons familiar with the Italian situation, clearly unnecessary. A few months ago, Badoglio promised that when the Allies reached Rome, he would step down from the premiership. Now he's saying that he intends to stay on the job until the king elects to name someone else. The whole Allied case for not dealing promptly and drastically with the king was made when it seemed a certainty that Rome would be occupied in a matter of weeks. The long delay has made it unwise to postpone a decision to get rid of the king unless it can be proved that Mr. Churchill's military reasons are incontestable. It will be hard to convince American or British people that we really need the aid of the king or Badoglio to beat Hitler. And it will be equally hard to convince the Italians or any other Europeans with whom we deal that there isn't a friendly support for highly suspected reactionaries in keeping the king and Badoglio in power. Mr. Churchill said last week that another government in Italy might not be of much use to the Allies. But it's for the Allies also to consider to whom they are committed to be of use. There surely is no commitment to the House of Savoy. Russian victories since last July have changed the whole outlook of the war. But not everyone has understood how this is aiding an American victory or that Americans have had a part in Russian successes. American participation in Russia is now demonstrated in the latest Lend-Lease report. Even Lend-Lease isn't something that every American feels he has a part in, but he has, and to this extent. The United States sent the Soviet Union in the year 1943 3.5% of the total American food production. Or to put it another way, every 33rd day, American food went off to the Soviet Union instead of going to Americans or someone else. Now, 3.5% isn't a vast share, but it isn't negligible. The total dollar value of Lend-Lease shipments to the Soviet Union since October 41 has now reached a figure of $4.25 billion. In proportion to the total cost of the war, to us or to the Russians, even so huge a sum as $4.25 billion is relatively small. but the help sent to Russia isn't properly judged either as so and so many dollars or as part of the total cost of the war. It has a value in proportion to Russian need. A bucket of water may be worth nothing at all in money at the well side, but money could hardly buy it in the heart of a desert. The Soviet Union couldn't have bought what it received in the world market, for there is no such thing. So what it received was invaluable insofar as money price is concerned. I shall refer in a moment to what we have out of the transaction, which is even more impossible to gauge in money. But let me specify what the United States has sent to the Soviet Union, as shown in this report. In the past year, we sent 5,000 planes. All told, we have sent 7,800 planes, and 3,000 of these were ferried to Soviet territory. Almost all of them were combat planes. Then, 4,700 tanks and tank destroyers. I don't know what percentage of planes and tanks and tank destroyers we have provided of all those fighting on the Eastern Front. It can't be very large. But undoubtedly, it is large enough to have made a big difference. At many points, possibly the difference between winning a signal victory, which otherwise wouldn't have been won, and which brought other victories in its train. We have sent 170,000 trucks, 33,000 jeeps, and nearly 25,000 other military motor vehicles. All told, 228,000 vehicles. The rapid Russian advance this winter has been made on American wheels, driven by American motors. And we not only have helped move the Russian army, but also the Russian soldier. We've sent 6 million pairs of army boots. We've sent 580,000 tons of food fats and oils, in which category Russia has a serious shortage. And this shipment has gone into Russian army rations, much of it during the winter fighting, when fats and oils are essential to human endurance. The amount of butter sent has been fairly small, 50,000 tons, which has gone mostly to Russian hospitals, that is, war hospitals. It has helped wounded and sick men to get well and back into the firing line. Not an item in the account, but tells of a need, such as of food, which has been answered by shipments of wheat, sugar, dried vegetables, powdered milk, and dried eggs, such as of steel, of which 1.3 million tons were sent, of special metals, like aluminum and copper, of which 384,000 tons were sent, and of machinery to make war equipment, of which $400 million worth was supplied, of aviation gasoline, of which 750,000 tons were sent, not to mention refinery equipment or machinery to turn out 1 million truck tires a year from synthetic rubber. What have the Russians done in the way of reverse lend-lease? Not much. Not enough to get on the records. The Russians simply have paid in military victories, in killing Germans, in destroying their equipment. Every German killed on the Eastern Front or knocked out of the war is one German fewer to confront an American soldier on the Western Front when it's opened. Every Russian victory has made America's time in the war that much shorter. One doesn't need to know how to pronounce the Russian names in the communiques. They all are notes on the score of victory, and that orchestral score will be well enough understood when it comes to performance. Lend-lease is bringing our soldiers back home appreciably sooner. The money value of the Russian effort is not being entered in any book. It isn't being balanced against the entries of the aid sent. But the bookkeeping is being done all the same in the most eloquent of entries. The Lend-Lease Act will come up soon for renewal, so it's worth repeating that Lend-Lease serves primarily American interests. It has served Russian and British interests, and in a big way. But Lend-Lease is the best way to get an American contribution to the European theater, where it counts heavily while we go through the longer process of getting American troops themselves to the battlefield. If it weren't so, there would be no Lend-Lease. And the latest Lend-Lease report is gratifying in showing we have done a really creditable job in this department of the war. A further feature of the Lend-Lease report is news of the decline in shipping losses on the Russian supply lines. Last year, we lost one ship out of every 100. In the year before, 12. the men of the American, Canadian, and British Navy and Air Forces who licked the U-boat and the inventors who helped them to do it were making more than a contribution in clearing the sea lanes to Britain. They were helping defeat German ground forces on the Eastern Front. And so were all Americans who were foregoing something or producing something on behalf of the Russians for the Lend-Lease account. The military record on the Russian front today is being compiled on three sectors, in the north, the center, and in the Dnieper Bend. The most spectacular news is from the northern sector, where the Red Army is fighting almost Indian style through marshes and woods, or crowding on the bastion of Skov, the gateway to the Baltic. Tonight, the Russians were only 7 miles away, and they could bring the German-held stronghold under artillery fire. They've occupied more than 400 inhabited places in sweeping forward in this region. In the central sector, where the Russians broke through at Rogachev, the Germans are counterattacking heavily, while the Russians appear to be bringing up supplies over the newly won crossing of the upper Dnieper. In the Dnieper Bend, the Russians, after taking Nikopol, are advancing, and as they move forward, they increase the danger of the German forces, which still hold on to the south in the Crimea. Another sector where heavy fighting is reported is deep in Poland, where the Germans are counterattacking at Luck. The Russians are extended here after their swift advance, and the Germans may be counting on gaining a local success. The political news on the Eastern Front still features the possibility of a peace between the Soviet Union and Finland. But contrary to current reports, there is no official information that the Finns have sent a delegation to Moscow to discuss peace. Former Premier Paasikivi returned to Helsinki from Stockholm to report the Russian terms. But it is not known that the Finns decided to send negotiators to Moscow. The heavy bombing of Helsinki, under the circumstances, appears needlessly brutal. But there are elements in Finland who argue against making peace now. These are persons who feel that Finland isn't doing so badly in the war, has made certain territorial gains, is not suffering casualties, and might better wait to make peace until the Russians are more exhausted. If Moscow thought that these people were being heeded, it would explain the resort to bombing Helsinki on the scale of the last raid, in which 600 bombers took part. A London report tonight attributed to diplomatic quarters there a belief that the Finns would be out of the war in 3 weeks, and that the British would sit in on the armistice negotiations, since they are technically at war with Finland and have a treaty with the Russians forbidding either country to make a separate peace. The British, it is believed, have already been informed of the Russian terms. And now, a friendly message to wartime America.
Thank you, Mr. Swain. Does it pay to use good oils and greases in your car? Well, just listen to this letter from Victor Ortland. He writes, "My brothers and I run a good-sized laundry business. We have 21 delivery trucks. Recently, we switched to mobile oil, mobile greases and gear oil, and adopted regular service schedules. Now, we're averaging 2 to 5 miles a gallon more from our gasoline, and we've cut repair bills to the bone. Now, why not stretch extra miles from your gasoline, too? Have your car serviced regularly with top-grade products like mobile oil and mobile greases designed to cut down friction and guard your car against excessive wear. Ask for a mobile lubrication job regularly from your mobile gas dealer displaying the sign of the flying red horse. Care for your car, for your country." Listen tomorrow night to Raymond Graham Swing at this hour over this station. This is the Blue Network.